Chapter 62. Thomas was taken to the privy, and then led back down into the basement with a plate of cold stew and a half loaf of bread. He was not tied to the post this time, but the men who were watching him made it clear that they would be sitting outside the door at the top of the steps, and he would be wise not to try to leave. As last meals for the condemned went, the stew was not what he would have chosen had he been offered a choice. Mr. Kwan's pâté, perhaps, or Isabella's artful pasta with pesto. A ribeye from Parker Ranch on the Big Island would have been fine, or pork wrapped in banana leaves and slow-cooked in an underground oven. Then he thought of Kayani's butter and lemon-basted parrotfish, and to his surprise, the memory brought a smile to his face, not a tear. His death would not be mourned by many. Even so, he regretted that he had not said goodbye to Akoni or Tiana, his most steadfast friends, or to Phineas McNabb and Winters. They had risked a great deal to help with Aubert's New York art world debut. The good news is that he was certain they would follow through and see to it that the paintings were the centerpiece of Mandelman's gallery at the Museum of Art opening. He chuckled when he thought about Fitch Donegan and Aata, the two men who had tailed him halfway around the globe and who would now be robbed of the pleasure of killing him themselves. Fate really did have a wicked sense of humor. Would Sweeney permit him to have a pencil and paper so he could write farewell notes to those he cared about, to Akoni and Tiana, John Hayden and Captain McNabb, Princess Noelani, the poet Walt Whitman, and Angela, the nurse who gave him a reason to live when he was at the lowest point of his life. He ran his hand through his hair. No, not the lowest point, he corrected himself. That was today. What would Angela say about his decision to walk meekly to whatever execution Sweeney had in store for him? She had lost her husband early in the war. Who better to understand his overwhelming grief? And yet, he also had to acknowledge that she worked through her pain and found new purpose in living. He chalked that up to her faith and natural optimism, two qualities which he had never spent much time developing. He began pacing across the room and trying not to think. From the number of feet passing by the basement window, he figured it must be midday. Whatever it was that Coots Sweeney had in store for him, it wouldn't be long now. The hansom cab driver did a double take when Akoni asked to be taken to Sweeney's saloon in Five Points. In all his years picking up fares at the best hotels and restaurants on Broadway and Fifth and Madison Avenue, no one had asked to be taken to the city's most notorious crime-ridden and gang-infested neighborhood. Not only that, but the Hawaiian gentleman, whose enormous frame was testing the limit of his carriage springs, was accompanied by a diminutive young lady for whom 5 points would only represent real danger. The driver turned in his seat.
"Begging your pardon, sir, and meaning no disrespect, but do you know 5 points? It really is no place for the likes of you and the lass."
"I appreciate your concern, driver," Akoni replied. "But yes, that is exactly where we want to go."
He and Tiana had spent the past hour with Isabella in her restaurant, considering the best way for her to persuade her friends at the police commissioner's office to send a squad of officers to Sweeney's and look for Thomas.
"The police won't take any direct action against Sweeney or any of his men, of course," Isabella said. "Every copper from the nearest recruit walking 5 points to the commissioner himself gets a piece of the monthly protection cash Sweeney pays out. The best we can hope for is that they might be able to drag him out of whatever mess he is in."
"That will have to be enough," Akoni replied. "Just do your best."
To Tiana's surprise, Isabella embraced Akoni and kissed him on the lips.
"Be safe," she said.
"The both of you." The driver shrugged and tapped the reins. The cab trotted away from the hotel under a cold, clear sky and joined the stream of traffic, heading pretty much everywhere in the city, except Five Points. The door to the basement opened, and Sweeney's lady friend came down the stairs with a basin of warm, soapy water and a clean washcloth.
"I noticed the blood in your hair," she said. "Do you mind if I..."
She stepped around behind the chair, dipped the cloth into the water, and began lightly wiping at the back of his head. When she was done, she pulled a chair from the corner of the stone-walled room and sat down in front of him.
"May I sit?" she asked.
Thomas simply nodded. She settled in and looked him over as if she were making an important decision.
"My name is Maddie. I manage the books, and as you saw, I also try to manage Coots."
Her smile was so warm that Thomas had to smile back.
"Why did you come here last night?" she asked. "This isn't the kind of place gentlemen like to frequent."
"Not even for the upstairs entertainment?" Thomas replied.
"From the looks of you, I'd say that you have never needed to pay for sex, Sherry."
"Perhaps it was for your menu, then," he said. Maddie wrapped her shawl tighter against the cold.
"There is too much here that I find confusing, Colonel. The Five Points is the last place an important person like yourself would come to for an evening excursion. And yet, here you are. And I am told you didn't even arrive until after 2 a.m., and the doorman was certain you walked down the street and up to our door. There were no cabs anywhere in sight," he said.
"Yes," Thomas replied softly. "I did walk."
"From?"
"Gilsey House."
"On Broadway?"
"Yes." A look of disbelief crossed Maddie's face.
"That is nearly 5 miles from here, and you walked all the way, in the snow and ice, to come here, to Sweeney's."
"To be honest, I didn't know where I was going. Stepping through your door was really an accident."
"In more ways than one, Colonel."
One of the guards came down the stairs to check on Maddie. She nodded and waved him off.
"I noticed that you're wearing a wedding band, Colonel Scoundrel. Does your wife know you are here?"
He shook his head.
"Is she in the city with you?"
"No," he said in a whispery voice. Maddie stared into Thomas's eyes.
"Where is your wife?"
she asked gently. He felt tears forming in his eyes. He wasn't ready for this. He did not know this woman, and yet...
"She's dead," he replied.
"Halfway around the world."
"When?"
"She died a month ago. We lived on the island of Moorea, near Tahiti. I did not get the news until last night."
"Sweet Lord," said Maddie. "And when you received word, you left your hotel and began to walk?"
He could not hold back the tears. They poured down his cheeks, and he lowered his head in an unsuccessful effort to hide them. Maddie laid her hand on his forearm.
"You came in from the cold to have a drink, and with minutes you were set upon by Tarl."
"Yes, that's right."
"Why did you come to the city, Colonel?"
"My friend in Tahiti is a great painter. I brought his work to be shown at the opening of the new Metropolitan Museum of Art later this month."
"Did you come alone?"
"Friends came with me. They're helping to arrange the exhibition."
"Are you in the art business?"
He shook his head and sniffled.
"I know nothing about it. It was more a matter of necessity that brought me here."
"May I call you Thomas?"
"Of course."
Mary pulled her chair a little closer.
"Thomas, I'm going to get 2 mugs of tea with honey and a couple of blankets. Then I want you to tell me the whole story."
"That could take a while."
She smiled.
"We seem to have plenty of time."
Mari stood and walked to the stairs. Then she turned and asked,
"What was her name?"
"Keani."
"Keani," she repeated. "Such a beautiful name."
2 hours later, Mari gathered up her blanket and mug and prepared to leave the basement. Her eyes were rimmed with tears, and when she hugged Thomas, she thanked him for telling his story.
"Kootz is not an evil man, Thomas, but he lives in a world that is defined by evil rules," she said. "You took his brother's life, and a penalty must be paid. There can be no exception to that. As to what his intentions are, I have no idea at all. I will make my case to him, but I can't promise you anything."
Thomas smiled. "I am ready. No matter what, I'm not going to fight."
"I wish you would,"
replied Mari as she walked to the stairs.
"I think Keone would say the same thing."
A half hour later, the sounds of a crowd gathering outside seeped through the basement windows. And as he was drifting off to sleep under the warm blanket, the door at the top of the stairs opened and his three jailers came down.
"It's 3 o'clock, Colonel. It'll be dark in 2 hours, and Mr. Sweeney wants to get this over with. Now."
"Is that why the crowd is gathering?" Thomas asked.
"Word went out this morning, and it looks like half of 5 points is out back,"
the man replied. "They loved Tarl Sweeney that much?"
"Hell no," said one of the other men. "Half the folk here would have paid good money to see you stick that bag of pus last night, Colonel. They're streaming in from all over the city because of the matchup."
"What's that?" asked Thomas, as they topped the stairs and went into the bar, which was empty except for a cleaning woman pushing a mop across the floor.
"The matchup, Colonel. 5 points greatest champion, toe-to-toe with a genuine Civil War hero, who's so damn famous that his portrait hangs in our bars. It's like something that Greek feller would have wrote."
"You mean Homer?" asked his friend.
"Damn straight. Hector against Achilles. That's what it is."
Thomas sighed as they went through the kitchen door towards the rear entrance of the saloon.
"A fight to the death," he said, feeling suddenly weary. The man who had cited the greatest one-on-one combat at the Battle of Troy 2,000 years earlier opened the back door, and they stepped out into a sunlit cobblestone courtyard. It was circular, at least 50 yards in diameter. There were outdoor tables piled high against an outer wall, no doubt to use when the weather improved. Dozens of packing crates and an old wooden bandstand lined the oval wall that separated Sweeney's from a row of tenement buildings. 3 beer carts were scattered around the makeshift fence, dispensing the warm, foamy drink from the great wooden casks. That was a lot of beer, Thomas thought. But then there were already hundreds of people packing the courtyard, and more were streaming in through the rear gate. They had climbed up on the crates, they sat on the fence, and they packed the outside stairs to the upper floors. Some had folding chairs, others had stools, but most of the crowd simply plopped on the ground all around the center circle and bided their time until the spectacle began. By the looks of the crowd, there were people from every corner of the earth. He spotted Russian fur caps and Jewish felt, Chinese jackets, African pullovers, and stavadors with hobnailed boots mixed in among a sea of raw woolen and homespun cotton shirts and dresses worn by poor working folk. He was bemused to see that there were also a few gentlemen from uptown in expensive wool overcoats and beaver skin hats. As he watched, he saw money changing hands among the group. He wondered what the betting odds were. There was a smattering of applause and a few catcalls when Thomas's guards marched him to the center of the circle.
"I pay him no mind, Colonel," said Rafe, the man holding his right arm. "You get a few good knocks in during the first 25 or 30 rounds, and they'll be eaten out of your hand."
Thomas's eyebrows raised. 25 or 30?
"I seen Paddy York and Big Jim Thorne go 67 rounds at the German beer garden last summer."
volunteered another of his guards.
Went on for 3 hours, and we took a half-hour dinner around 35. Aye, that was a fight.
Thomas started to scan the crowd for any faces he recognized, only to remember that no one knew where he was. Then he saw Maddie, seated under an awning beside two of the working girls. She made eye contact, shook her head, and then turned away. He wished he could tell her that it was all right. He was right where he wanted to be. An old man in a threadbare coat and top hat walked to the center of the cobblestone circle and raised his cane for the crowd's attention.
The contest today will be conducted in strict accordance with the London Prize Ring rules.
He began in a clear, theatrical voice, only to be drowned out by boos and curses. Rules were something this crowd avoided at all costs.
Now then, continued the old man, you can have your fight today or not. It's no concern of mine, but them's the rules, and they will be obeyed, or the combatant not abiding will forfeit. I will be the judge, and that's all to it.
He waited for the grumbling to subside and then walked over to a white chalk line drawn in the center of the courtyard.
This line will be the scratch, he called out. When each 30-second round is complete, the men will have a 30-second rest in their corner, and then they will have 8 seconds to get to the scratch and resume the contest. The first man who does not make it to the scratch in 8 seconds will be declared the loser.
I have a corner? Thomas asked his guards.
Just come with us, laddie,
answered Rafe.
We're your corner today.
There'll be no biting, the old man was saying, to more jeers and boos. No butting, no eye gouging, and no blows or kicks to the balls.
At that admonition, the crowd groaned with feigned unhappiness. No ball kicking. Where was the sport in that prohibition?
If we go 20 rounds, there will be a 5-minute break to refresh your beer, and I have the great pleasure of telling you that your beer will be paid for by good Mr. Sweeney himself, in gratitude for attending his great victory today.
Applause and cheers greeted that announcement, and they surged in volume as the kitchen door opened and Coots Sweeney emerged with 2 men beside him. Sweeney wore a black, long-sleeved turtleneck, above black boxing leggings and laced leather boots. He raised both hands to the crowd and basked a moment in their adulation. Then he walked across the courtyard to within a few feet of Thomas.
So this is how it is, Thomas said in a quiet voice.
I could not allow my brother's death to go unavenged, Sweeney replied. I am the leader of the Sundowners, and they expect no less.
I'm guessing they weren't happy that you didn't simply put your pistol to my head and blow my brains out.
Sweeney turned to the crowd and waved again.
You might say that,
he said with his back to Thomas. Sweeney turned and extended his hand. When they shook, the crowd cheered and began stamping their feet.
Gentlemen to the scratch, the old man called out. Referee to the ring.
Sweeney turned to go and then stopped and looked back at Thomas.
I'm sorry about your wife, scoundrel. May God bless her eternal soul.
The winter sky was pale, blue, cloudless and cold. A breeze came off the river, and the scents of beer and cigar smoke mingled with the aromas of the crush of people filling the courtyard. At the referee's direction, Thomas and Sweeney faced one another and pressed their outstretched fists together. Then the old man raised an iron triangle and struck it with a rod. The crowd roared.